Hitanyam Pashavastriyaham Nadukyanti Manaha Pritim Pumsakama Halasyate Yad Pritiyani Vrihiyavam Hitanyam Pashavastriyaham Na Dukyanti Manaha Pritim Pumsha Kama Hatasyate Yat Pritivyam Vrihiyavam Hitanyam Pashavastriyaham Na Dukyanti Manaha Pritim Pumsa Kama Hatasyate. Please chant. Yad Pritivyam Vrihiyavam Hitanyam Pashavastriyaham Na Dukyanti Manaha Pritim Pumsa Kama Hatasyate. Yad Pritivyam Vrihiyavam Danyam Pasavastriyaham Na Dukyanti Manaha Pritim Pumsa Kama Hatasyate. Yat Pritivyam Vrihiyavam Hitanyam Pasavastriyaham Na Duyanti Manaha Pritim Pumsa Kama Hatasyate. Thank you. The word for word, yat, what, pritivyam, within this world, vrihi, food grains, rice, yavam, barley, hiranyam, gold, pasava, animals, Jiaha, wives or other woman, Nadukyanti, do not give, Manahapatim, satisfaction of the mind, Pumsaha, to a person, Kamahatasya, because of being victimized by lusty desires, Te, there. Translation by Srila Prabhupada for text 13. A person who is lusty cannot satisfy his mind, even if he has enough of everything in the world, including rice, barley, and other food grains, gold, animals, and woman. Nothing can satisfy him. Purport. Improvement of one's economic condition is the aim and object of a materialist, but there is no end to this material advancement, for if one cannot control his lusty desires, he will never be pleased. Even if he gets all the material wealth of the world, in this age we see much material improvement, but still people are struggling to get more and more material opulence. Manaha shastani andriyani prakriti sani saras sarati. Oh, sorry, karati, karasati. Although every living entity is a part of the Supreme Being, because of lusty desire, one continuously struggles for so-called betterment of one's economic condition. To have a satisfied mind, one must give up his heart disease of lusty desires. This can be done only when one is Krishna conscious. And this verse that Srila Prabhupada is quoting. Bhaktim Param Bhagavati Pratilabhya Kamam Hrid Ragam Asvapinoti Achirena Diraha, and that's from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:33-39. If one becomes Krishna conscious, then he can give up this heart disease. Otherwise, this disease of lusty desires will continue, and one cannot have peace in his mind. Om Agyana Timrandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shri Mata Rama Padaswami Iti Namine Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripasam Duvyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha. I'm going to read the English translation for the verse that Srila Prabhupada quotes in this purport, and then I'll read the Sanskrit. Anyone who faithfully hears or describes the Lord's playful affairs with the young gopis of Vrindavan will attain the Lord's pure devotional service. Then he will quickly become sober and conquer the disease of the heart. And the Sanskrit, this is Srimad Bhagavatam 10:33-39. Vrikriti tam vraja vadubir idam cha vishno shradan vino nusmayat ata varnayet yaha bhaktim param bhagavati pratilabhya kamam hrid ragam asvapinoti achirena dira. This verse is pointing to the conjugal pastimes of that relationship that's there between the gopis and Lord Krishna. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he glorifies these conjugal pastimes or that relationship between the gopis seeing Krishna as their husband and Krishna having a reciprocal relationship with the gopis. So in that romantic affair, and this is the reason Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is glorifying that pastime, he says that there's a difficult to be believed kind of spiritual potency in that pastime. And this potency or this spiritual strength that's coming from that pastime is such that the hearts of souls that are laboring under their developed behavioral patterns, both the subtle and the gross, and they come to experience some sort of attraction, even through all those difficult behavioral patterns in the mind and the external physical patterns. They actually come to experience some attraction within their hearts, even if those hearts are completely defiled, like in the most abysmal state. So Srila Prabhupada, he states actually that it's a fact that And I guess these are sort of criteria that a person just have a simple heart and that person, just by hearing this narration of these loving affairs of Krishna, will be attracted to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. And gradually, that person will become a devotee, just no matter how defiled the condition of the heart. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and I'm particularly referencing him because I found his commentary on this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam very interesting. So I guess I'm going to interweave it through the discussion, his very interesting thoughts. He states that even if one has this heart disease, so it's considered a kind of disease of material lust, or meaning there's this appetite for material pleasure. One can become imbued with prema, this is Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, by continuously hearing. And the word that comes from this verse that I read the Sanskrit of is anushrumyat. Or just by glorifying this particular pastime, or even by writing, of course, these are our great previous acharyas, they were doing this, by writing poetry connected to this pastime. And that's from this verse again, the word that was used is varmayet, so that's the writing of verses about this autumnal rasalila. And even if it were writing about other pastimes of Lord Krishna, but particularly this particular lila of Lord Krishna's. So there's the example of Srila Sanatan Goswami, who did just that, because it's a very nice compilation, the Krishna Lila Stava, where he's evoking remembrance of these pastimes by summarizing Srila Sukadev Goswami's narration that we find in the Bhagavatam in the form of very short verses, and they're very simple verses. And as he writes his a series of verses, it gets punctuated, this is Srila Sanatan Goswami, by an obeisance. So it's actually written, the verse is written, and then obeisance number, and it goes up to 108, the whole summarizing of the pastimes of Krishna that are found in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but in a more shortened form. So this is the means for killing that, you know, appetite for material enjoyment. And so I'm going to read one such verse because it's relevant to this particular text that we read today. So this is Srila Sanatan Goswami. And I think it's, when you hear the Sanskrit, it sounds beautiful. Rasastava samarambim gopi mandala mandita gopi hema mani sreni majya majya harin mani. So that's from Krishna Lila Stava, text 290, and I'm going to read the translation. So this is something that one is supposed to hear that's like going to eliminate some of this great appetite for material pleasure. So here's the translation for that very beautiful verse. Surrounded by circles of gopis, you commence the Rasa festival. In the jewel chain of golden gopis, you were an emerald between each gopi and the next. And then there's obeisance number 73. That's where he's come up to for that particular verse. And continuing, you favored the gopis with the highest glory And the cowherd men harbored no envy towards you. Rather, they dedicated to you their homes, their children, their wives, and their very lives. Please be satisfied with me. So this is Srila Sanatana Goswami and his whole mood in approaching this very beautiful pastime. Now, to give up this disease that's in the heart for material pleasure, Srila Prabhupada states that this can only be done when one is Krishna conscious. He states that in this verse. So that attraction, which is what the object is of reading or glorifying or writing verses, particularly on the Rasa Lila, which is what's referenced here in this purport. That attraction and that prema or that love for Krishna within the heart, by its very effect, it destroys that disease within the heart. So a couple of days ago, His Holiness Ramapada Swami was focusing on some words. And Sharampada Swami is quite scholastic. He always breaks down words and makes very fantastic connections. But this disease in the heart is the kama hrid ragam. Those are the words. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti states, when you use the same word kama in relation to Lord Krishna or kamam, then kama is actually prema or pure love. So you can have that same kind of a desire to enjoy or a kind of voracious appetite for Krishna. So then it's actually pure love. So you can use the same word according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura in relation to Krishna, and it has the opposite effect of the material lust or the karma. So continuing, this lust or this desire for material pleasure, it takes the form of 3 degrees of covering of a person, which obscures the pure consciousness. So there are different similes that are used to illustrate the degree of covering of this disease. So lust, or this desire for material pleasure, can be said to be like smoke in a fire. That means that the fire of the living spark, the soul, can be barely perceived. You know, when you see smoke, you kind of, if you try and look through smoke, everything is very dim in the distance. So it's something like that. One can barely perceive that living spark of the soul within a particular person. And this can sometimes be seen in early Krishna consciousness. So one speaks to a person and one says something of a Krishna conscious nature, one says something from Bhagavad Gita, and you can see it goes right over the person's head. Completely missed it. And then you understand, oh, this is like that smoke that's covering the living spark. You know, to them, it's almost, the covering is quite thick. Even though it's smoke, it's thick smoke. So it's difficult to penetrate. And then there's another kind of covering of that pure consciousness or the soul. And that degree of covering can be seen to be like dust on a mirror. And that's this simile indicates that already, because dust on a mirror, you can more easily wipe away. I mean, smoke has some density. You can easily remove dust from a mirror. And it means that already some cleansing has started. So a person may already be beginning to chant the holy names. So the degree of covering is much less. And that desire for material pleasure, it's already lessened to some degree. And then the last simile that's used for the degree of covering of this disease on the heart that's obscuring that pure consciousness is how was it put? I'm forgetting what the last one is. Oh, that's right. The embryo in the womb. So in this particular case, that's very material, super dense. It's super, super dense. Like all the material elements combined is not just the ether. It's not just a little particle of something. It's actually all the elements are together there and concealing. So in that particular case, you can say the covering of that particular person or that covering of the disease is such that almost they're conscious, they're almost without any consciousness. I mean, it's so extreme. And so often it's said that's like the condition of an entity in the form of a tree. The consciousness is barely there. So it means that that desire for material pleasure had been so strong that the soul is almost completely obscured. And this is discussed in 338 Bhagavad Gita, yeah. Now, besides this analysis of the degree of covering of this material lust or this desire for material pleasure, there's also the method that's used for defeating that desire for material pleasure and the means to become Krishna conscious, because that's the recommendation of Srila Prabhupada, that it's the only way you can actually defeat this disease. So usually we find in Western medicine there's a huge amount of funds allocated to researching the methods for eliminating disease. So there's always the hope of some cure for something, and that was the case with whatever new disease manifests. So at some period of time, there was the world was getting, I guess, harassed a lot by AIDS. And so there was so much funds allocated to try and find some way to eliminate that disease. And then before that, I think there was a time when tuberculosis was a huge disease, and then so many funds to try and find some cure for that. So in terms of this particular disease, this very subtle disease that's not so immediately visible, one has to have trained eyes to understand it. And this disease where the heart is, you know, just looking for material pleasure, the antidote, that cure, is Krishna consciousness. So it's a very broad term. So there's, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives the first dosage, so to speak, to Arjuna for how he can actually tackle this very subtle disease of, you know, searching for material pleasure. And Krishna puts that it's necessary to go from the more external gross level, so how the senses are reaching out into the world to look for that material pleasure. So one looks at how those senses are reaching out and actually tries to regulate their reaching out, so you don't let them just reach out, you know, through the hearing or the seeing or the touching. One regulates it and starts to become aware of what one is reaching out to look at or to hear or to touch. And now the reason Krishna gives for this need to begin with curbing the senses, so the still subtle, but less subtle than that goes on internally, the way the senses reach out into the material world, is that if one isn't pulling those senses back and one's giving them free rein, it actually destroys any desire. So these are all very subtle things. It destroys any desire for self-realization. So it's extremely destructive to give the senses free rein. And this desire for self-realization, it's such that when one accesses, I mean, if those senses are kept in check, it allows one to access knowledge that's very confidential, and it's quite mysterious. I mean, what we're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, it's highly confidential knowledge. And but if those senses are kept in check, it allows for an opening where one can actually understand something of this confidential knowledge, because of Lord Krishna's explanations and our Acharya's explanations. So it's necessary to learn this consciousness, you could say, because exposure to the scriptures means you're learning a certain kind of consciousness. So you have to create room for learning. So for instance, I mean, I'm often in a classroom with very young minds that the senses are a little bit out of control generally. So inevitably a young child brings a backpack, and then within that backpack they've got two of their favorite toys, and it's because the toys are right there in their backpack, there's it's almost the impetus for the sense of touch or the visual sense to reach out and, you know, take the toy. So it'll be, you know, there's an attempt, say the teacher, myself, is attempting to create an environment that's conducive to learning Krishna consciousness, and then just by the presence of these toys in the backpack, the senses go to that. And I see it, it's very graphic. The child's senses completely go to that, and then the senses of others in the class also go to that. So then it's always necessary to completely remove the objects, because there's no, to have the objects right there means that there's very little chance that they'll be able to restrain their senses. So I always completely remove the objects. They land up behind me, invisible. So then it allows for some learning to happen. So that's just a simple example of how this works. And so it's necessary to learn this consciousness of how one is actually very much interconnected with Lord Krishna. In fact, one's bound to him. And the senses create that illusion that there's, you know, separation from him, because that pull is so great towards, you know, reaching out for the material pleasure. And so it becomes necessary to control the senses, even if it's rather difficult. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakuri points out that actually the senses are easier to control than the mind or intelligence. And one can see it, because, you know, to graphically remove a toy is, you know, quite straightforward. But then if that toy is imprinted in the mind, and I think yesterday Naveen Krishna Prabhu brought that up, that imprint on the mind is much more difficult to erase. So I find with the children, they actually tend to, especially if they are with each other, they have a common cultural, I guess, a pool of sense pleasure. So they share a similar thing, whether it's a TV show or whether it's a particular toy or a particular game. They're all on the same page. So they all know that particular thing. It's like a shared thing. So it means that it's already imprinted on the mind. So I think, this is going to be hard. and indeed, that is the case. Once it's imprinted, it stays there and it's reinforced by, you know, others sharing in that same sort of pleasure. And and the acharyas give more graphic examples of how, if something's imprinted on the mind, how it actually then acts out through the senses. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that it often takes the form of somebody wanting to steal somebody else's property. So now with children, this is very easy to observe. Very easy. If there's a desirable object imprinted on the mind, the senses will want to reach out to take it. So inevitably you see these clashes going on. It's very graphic. so obviously one shouldn't engage the senses in this kind of way. I mean, to actually go so far as to not only reach out for a pleasure, but to try and take something that is somebody else's source of pleasure as one's own is even worse. if one is actually able, and this is why the recommendation from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is to first control the senses in Lord Krishna too, is if one is restraining the senses in this kind of way, after some time the mind becomes free of the desire, and that desire for material pleasure. And I mean, I have this experience myself. I have mentioned this recently. if I don't expose myself to, you know, shopping images, whatever it is, there's no desire for it. It's irrelevant. I don't actually need it. But if I expose myself to it, then, you know, the mind starts thinking, oh, yes, very attractive. This one better than that one? Yes, maybe. So, you know, you set a whole chaining process in motion, so to speak. so if one becomes Krishna conscious, so one's regulating one's senses, one can start to give up this disease that's in the heart. So it almost becomes voluntary. You've started applying the antidote for that desire for material pleasure. And then the result of that is that the mind isn't agitated. So that's why the statement, you can have peace of mind. Because while one is not while one is allowing the senses to reach out, while one is then contemplating in the mind, examining, getting a desire for the particular object, there's a lot of agitation. But then if you're not actually exposing just the external reaching out of the senses, then immediately the mind is peaceful. It's such a relief. So rather than put oneself through the whole cycle of all that agitation, it's better not to let the senses reach out. There's a description by Narada Muni of what happens in his case. So here's a pure devotee talking about when he's not letting his senses reach out. So he says, the Supreme Lord Krishna, whose glories and activities are pleasing to hear, at once appears on the seat of my heart as if called for as soon as I begin to chant his holy activities. So for a devotee like Narada Muni, as soon as he actually is bringing the senses under control and engaging in some activity, because the earlier recommendation was to, you know, glorify a pastime or hear a pastime repeatedly or write verses connected to a pastime. In his case, he's talking just about using the voice to chant the holy name of Krishna. Then as soon as he does that, it's as though Lord Krishna has been called and Lord Krishna appears within his heart. So now this is interesting because if one's engaging in this hearing and chanting and remembering the name and the activities of the Lord, then it means that a reflection starts happening within the mind. So just the performance of that activity of chanting means that then the actual Lord Krishna himself is appearing within the heart. And this ability of Krishna to make appear himself, as well as there be, you know, his glorification part, so the chanting or the reading or the hearing, this is possible because the two are identical. So Krishna has that remarkable ability. And so it's a kind of pictorial television that happens within the heart. So this is how Narada Muni explains this, that it's as though one is penetrating into the presence of Lord Krishna by one's transcendental chanting. So it's rather extraordinary. It's a means of penetrating into his presence. So it's so much superior to think of that, one's penetrating into the presence of Lord Krishna versus the very dull thing of just reaching out for some material, sensual thing that then causes all this internal agitation. The other is actually the presence of Krishna, the pictorial, so to speak, presence of Krishna within the heart through the performance of that activity of that, some sense reaching out to him and penetrating his presence. So rather extraordinary. And there's a need to have this kind of pure heart, and this is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'm going to read the Sanskrit or the Bengali, and I get a bit shy me reading Bengali, but I'll just read it as it's written, so forgive for those who know Bengali. Sahaje nirmalaye brahmana jirdaya krishnera vasita e yogya sthana haya. So the heart of a brahmana, this is the translation, is by nature very clean. Therefore, it is a proper place for Krishna to sit. And this is spoken by Lord Chaitanya. There was a devotee, Amoga, and he was dying of cholera. And usually when there's some external disease that's manifest, especially by a devotee, it's indication of some impurity in the heart. So Lord Chaitanya actually came to him, and he indicated to Amoga that he had allowed jealousy to sit in his heart. And so he'd contaminated this very pure, purified space of his heart. So Lord Chaitanya emphasized to him, the heart of a brahmana is by nature very clean. Therefore, it's a proper place for Krishna to sit. So that's the idea, that one's not bringing unwanted things into the heart. Very subtle things. So in this particular case, in this pastime of Lord Chaitanya, it was jealousy that was kind of residing within the heart. So it was something that Lord Chaitanya was pointing out to Amoga wasn't suitable for such a purified space, because that's where Krishna sits. So when one's using or engaging in that activity of hearing and bringing Krishna into the heart, or Krishna coming at will into the heart, then one works to keep that space clean, to allow him to sit there. So it's possible, of course, that lust or greed or this kind of jealousy, etc., some desire for material pleasure, it could overwhelm one. And It's actually said that those that are practicing yoga, like regular yoga, they're actually also practicing trying to restrain the senses. But the problem is that at any moment, as they're restraining the senses, it's much more likely that they're going to be overwhelmed by lust, that desire for material pleasure or greed, much more likely. Narada Muni also says that the reason for this is that it's not sufficient to just give satisfaction. Or try to give satisfaction without there being devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So the yogi will have trouble. There will be much more likely that when some sensorial pleasure is there, or the possibility of it, the senses will automatically want to go there. So it's much more likely that the regular yogi will be beset by that desire for finding material pleasure. So obviously, and this is Srila Prabhupada's point here, Narada Muni trying to explain it, that it's more effective and more practical to be performing something directly, so putting oneself directly in connection with the Supreme Lord, as opposed to just artificially trying to restrain the senses. So, you know, you're just pulling them back, but there's nothing for them to reach out to that's completely satisfying. And what you really want is reaching out to the Supreme Lord. So there are mystic processes where persons sit, or they think, they feel, they will, they concentrate, they meditate. There are. But again, it's a little artificial. I have somebody that I know from my early days in New York, who is a roommate, who does this kind of yoga practice. So it's all very, very artificial. I mean, the person, you know, has all good habits, but you can see that there's a lack because there's no connection with the Supreme Lord. Now, in the case of somebody practicing such yoga, eventually they come to transcendence, and at last they're able to control their senses. But the reason for the greater effectiveness of devotional service is just that the senses are transcendentally engaged when one's connecting them to Lord Krishna. And there's really not that much chance of them being engaged in sense satisfaction. I mean, one is fearful, and this is very good. One is fearful that the senses will want to be engaged in, so this is very good. But actually, there's very little chance. Like, even on the mental plane, if one thinks of something that's like of a sensual nature, just the fact that one's already constantly using one's senses to reach out to Krishna, there's actually very little chance that the senses will really go and be engaged in sense satisfaction. So again, the artificial checking of the senses means that as soon as there's some opportunity for sense enjoyment, the senses are going to take advantage. Now, without the devotional service of the Lord, neither the yoga system nor any kind of philosophical process can ever successfully act as a means for self-realization. And the reason that those recommendations were given right in the beginning, that one hears pastimes like even the Rasalila, or writes verses, or glorifies, is that if one takes hearing, it allows for some detachment from worldliness. I mean, this just happens naturally. I went through a little period recently where I wasn't out very much, like making a trip into downtown Chicago to run this or that errand. So quite a long time passed where I wasn't making any such trip. And then one day I had to make a trip and had to run an errand in downtown Chicago. And I find just looking around, it all seemed like, you know, one's watching something from a great distance. It's of not much importance. It all looks like one's watching a movie from a great distance. So that is that, you know, one gets detached from worldliness. One doesn't feel so much a part of that. And and also the result of hearing is that the body is also getting transformed in the long sequence of things from being a material body into a spiritual body. It's actually going on. So actually what it means in the end is that the jivatma or the soul is actually the conqueror of lust, because it's activities of the soul that are conquering that desire for material pleasure. So even if one conquers the senses, the mind and intelligence, still it's the soul that's the most powerful. This, because that activity of the soul in relation to Krishna is so powerful, it means that material activities, you know, the running of an errand in downtown Chicago or whatever, it doesn't ever entangle one. You know, you don't get caught up in it and all the intricacies of it, because the mind is already so satisfied in serving the lotus feet of the Lord. And it also leads to a deeper understanding that the soul is separate from all these coverings of the mind and the intelligence. It really is separate because it overrides everything, just that connection to Lord Krishna. And this helps to destroy that lust or that desire for material pleasure. These were the words used by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur when, in his commentary in this verse, he puts it this way. It destroys lust which is unconquerable by being firm in the self by the self. So firm in the self by the self. You know, you're very firmly in that position. You know where you stand. And and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he raises the rhetorical question, how can Krishna Prema appear when material lust is present? The two just don't go together. I mean, they're completely separate. They just don't go together. So that's a love for Krishna. It starts to appear in somebody who's accepted the statements of scripture with faith, and one who's also, and this was the word here, is dira or sober. He doesn't have, or the person, or he, she doesn't have foolishness. So the foolishness is that, you know, wanting to pursue what the senses are reaching out for. That's the foolishness. And also, you know, one is able to reflect very deeply on the abysmal condition if one's giving away to this disease. So, you know, as one reflects more, it's very sobering because one sees the embarrassment. I mean, one sees people in such embarrassing situations because they've given into their senses. So it's very sobering the more one reflects on it. coming back to Srila Sanatana Goswami and the recommendation in this particular text that the repeated glorification of Lord Krishna's pastime with the gopis is such an antidote to this material lust. I'm going to read something more from Krishna Lila Stava. So here's Srila Sanatana Goswami. So it's very graphic, but one thinks of the sheer beauty of this pastime. It's so beautiful that, you know, any kind of material pleasure has to fall away. So I'm going to read a verse, and it's also followed by his obeisance, number 72. So here he says, "You endlessly enjoyed with your own consorts who had been born as the wives of cowherds. O brazen pursuer of the gopis, you were decorated with kumkum from the gopis' breasts." So just a simple verse, which is so deep and such beauty. And so Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that this divine rasa lila is like the loving smile of the intimate devotee of Krishna, who is victorious and glorified for his ability to conquer Krishna by his pure love. So that's rather wonderful, his statement. So these were some thoughts that came from this particular purport of Srila Prabhupada on this verse, which took all my attention even more so than what could have been a discussion on the futility of seeking constant material objects, which are listed here. So if there's any thought to expand the discussion.
Thank you, Mother Krishna Shabir class. You made a lot of nice, wonderful points. One thing, I guess a comment and question, forgive me if it doesn't flow properly, but you were mentioning that we want to, just like a person comes into our house, we want it to be clean, and you said we should make a place for Krishna to sit in our hearts. A clean, and it's kind of related to this verse here. One thing that came to mind is that sometimes people use their houses as storage, even though it's a house. It's just, when you walk in, wow, is this a house or a storage? And one thing that came to mind is that at the end of chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita, I think it says lust is stored in many places, and one of them is the mind. And one reason it's probably difficult to satisfy the mind is that I just remember the other day I was helping Jitendra move some things into his storage. Now, a storage has certain dimensions, length, width, size. There's only so much you could put in there. The mind, on the other hand, it has no dimensions. You could put unlimited things in there. As soon as you clean out the mind with the Hare Krishna mantra, you walk outside, you know, it's filled back up again. So that's one reason I think it's probably hard. But my question is related to the point that one thing I appreciate what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it's in Jiva Dharma. He says that even though a Vaishnava, in chapter 8, at the end of chapter 8, he says, even though a Vaishnava may purify himself of even lust, still the desire for pratishta, pride doesn't leave so easily. Pride is even greater than lust, essentially. And we can see this in the pastime of Hiranyakashipu when he performed so many austerities. His name means one who loves money and women. But he was able to give up women, lust, to achieve his certain goals, but he couldn't give up his egoistic pride when Prahlad said, "My dear father, you're not God." What? And so my question is related to one observation I noticed. In the material world, we see that when you were mentioning that we should defeat our enemies, defeat the desire of sense enjoyment. So that brought to mind the material world, when people defeat their enemies, as related to this point, Bhaktivinoda Thakur points, is that they're glorified when you defeat your enemies. Politician who defeat another politician, they're glorified. A philosopher who defeats another philosopher, he's glorified. An army who defeats another army, they're glorified. A team who defeats another team in sports is glorified. But when we tell, if we tell someone, "Today I forgave someone, today I apologize to someone, today I was humble, today I didn't always get my way, or today I only looked at 2 hours of porn instead of 24 hours of porn," nobody ever glorifies you for mentioning this, for trying to defeat your enemies on the inside. So my question is, how do we focus on defeating our enemies on the inside and give up the mentality that that Krishna won't give us his mercy, just like Narada Muni. Forgive me for rambling on, but Lord Shiva, in the Mohini Murti pastime, where he became lusty at Mohini and discharged semen, he never told Vyasadeva, "Take that out of the Bhagavatam. I don't want this to get out in the universe." And Krishna still glorified Lord Shiva. And Narada Muni, in his previous life as Upabharhana, he was lusty and considered attractive. He's like, I consider myself attractive. So some brahmanas cursed me to become a sudra boy and devoid of beauty. And therefore, I became humble, took some prasadam from some sages, and became Nardamuni in my next life after that. So what are some steps we could do to focus on, you know, defeating our enemies on the inside? Because, you know, in the end, there's so many arguments between devotees. I'm right, you know, Maharaj, I want to prove I'm right, but what is the use? You know, that still doesn't give you any happiness. So I don't know if my question was clear. Like I told you, there's a lot of storage in my mind. So sometimes I do spring cleaning, sometimes not. It doesn't work so well. So that's why you don't know what you're going to get from me each day. So maybe you could expand on some of these cluttered points, like storage. Pretty cluttered.
So Jai Baladev was making a comparison between a physical storage space in the mind, and just drawing, making an observation that the mind doesn't have, you know, the same kind of physical constraints as a physical storage space. So in actual fact, it can actually hold a great deal, and in fact, one can even add to the clutter quite easily. So he was interested in, or posing the question, how one could actually, stay free of this clutter in some sense. And wow. And yeah. Well, you were answering your own question to some degree, because you were noting that the opposite to adding to the clutter is to perform some activities that are more in line, I guess, with the scriptural teachings, being, taking a position of humility during the course of the day, perhaps even reflecting on some mistake one had made, and even acknowledging it, and also minimizing some bad habit that had been put into a tighter time frame to be indulged in, as opposed to having unlimited reign. So there's that awareness of the following of some of the teachings that are there and putting them into practice is certainly the means to declutter. And the reason it declutters without one having to, now physically throw out a machine, or physically throw out three boxes, or physically, spray down a storage space, is that just by doing those subtle things, because this is a very subtle matter we're talking about, by doing those kind of subtle things, particularly remembering that these are things done for Krishna and in relation to Krishna, it's a profound effect that it declutters without one having to do all those physical things. There's it's so powerful that space is cleared without one physically having to move, throw out boxes, eliminate machines, clear a path. You don't even have to go through that. Just performing those acts in relation to Krishna, remembering that this is the teaching, this is the means for decluttering, is The benediction of the activity is decluttering. So if, and the reason for that is that one is actually drawing the attention of the senses and the mind to the necessity of making a choice. So the choice is being made in the direction of Krishna. So every time that choice is made in the direction of Krishna and the senses are restrained, or the mind's urge is not acted on, or it's curtailed to some degree, the 2 hours versus the whole day, there's a whole clearing of space that happens. Because it's such a deliberate act, and it's being done under the protection of Krishna for his, in his service. There's benediction that comes. The benediction is the pouring of water on some burning fire that's consuming one, that's causing so much agony, so much distress, because the one sees that one's helplessly having to follow that urge of the mind, or helplessly having to follow where the senses are taking one. So just by trying to restrain it, there's benediction that's coming. So the decluttering happens by the mercy of Krishna. Yeah, no need to move those boxes. But anyway, that is a very nice comparison. Yeah, benediction comes. That's the best way to put it. And that's the recommendation of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that one try to do those activities that augment the likelihood of one practicing that kind of restraint. So there's activities of hearing pastimes, chanting, that increases the likelihood that one will remember to restrain the senses, to not act on the mind's push. Yeah, so that's the response. As best I could. Thank you very much. Oh no, thank you very much. Thank you for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.